This is sort of a treat for me. Can you now get, guys can all hear? I love it. Hey, so how about a round of applause for a gentleman who's won 29 Ironman 70.3s in his career, 2004 Olympian, Mr. Andy Potts. Hey, how you doing?
I'm great, Bob.
This is so nice. Thank you for having me to your camp.
Absolutely.
This is pretty fun stuff.
Yeah, we got a great crowd. Very captive audience.
Which is what we always like. They can't go anywhere. They're trapped.
Right.
They have to listen to us. So take me back a little bit. You swam at Michigan, and 1996, fourth at the Olympic trials. And at that point, did you feel like, okay, I've done all I can. It's time to move into the business world. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, so I grew up as a swimmer. Swam since I was 5 years old. And when I went to Michigan, I went there to swim.
Right.
96 trials for me, I was 19. And I fell a little short of my goal, which was to make the Olympic team. But I knew that in 2000 was 4 years away, I'd be 23 years old. Not old by any stretch of the imagination. And I could have an opportunity in 2000. But we had a powerhouse of a team in Michigan. I mean, our team had 19 swimmers, 13 of us made the Olympic team in 96. Fantastic group of guys. In my lane, we had the gold medalist in Tom Dolan and Eric Namestnik, the silver medalist from the Games, and Marcel Wouda, who is from the Netherlands. He got fourth. And then two of us were, we missed our teams, but.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know.
You're still great.
Yeah.
So when you finish college and you get into the working world, mm-hmm. I think you moved to Chicago and you're yep. the business guy and you're like everybody else. You're making 90 cold calls a day and doing a thing. But there was something missing. You felt like, I still want to be an athlete.
Yeah. So it felt like the rug was pulled out from underneath me. Each step along my progression in life was planned out. There was just like a lot of people, right? It was elementary school, middle school, high school. I knew I had a passion for swimming. I knew I loved it. I knew I wanted to swim in college. And so after college was over, it was like, well, what do I do now? There's no next step for, it was that quarter life crisis. There's no next step for anybody.
Oh, especially as a swimmer, right? As a swimmer, because it's one thing. As a runner, you start running the roads. You're done running track.
Yes.
You run the roads. You move the marathon. As a swimmer, what do? You keep swimming back and forth.
Yeah, and it wasn't as organized back in the 1999. There were a few professional swimmers. My college roommate was one of them, Tom Malchow. Great swimmer. He was the existing world record holder. So he had an avenue for him, but I wasn't as good as he was.
Right.
So swimming professionally, when you're that close, but not close enough, it's very obvious. And I wasn't going to make a living as a swimmer. So I thought, okay, maybe I'll try my hand in lots of different avenues. And one of them was Sure Payroll as a
exactly
inside sales rep.
But at some point, because triathlon was in the Olympics for the first time in 2000.
Yes.
And so there was a USA Triathlon was based out in Colorado Springs.
Yep.
And you picked up the phone and basically called somebody over there and another cold call.
I used that as my metric that day.
Yeah, I say, okay. I made a cold call to USA Triathlon saying, hey, I would like to be a triathlete. Yep. I'd like to go to the Olympics.
Sure.
What was the response?
Yeah, so when triathlon made its place in the Olympic movement, that was a huge beacon for me. I didn't act on it until 2 years later.
And you had never done a triathlon?
Never.
Yeah.
No, I ran a few races in middle school.
Yeah.
But then I focused exclusively on my swimming. And when triathlon was out there as this hope for me to realize my Olympic dreams, I was. It took me a little while to realize it. But once I kind of found my passion for sports again, I was all in. So I called USA Triathlon and... but this was back before, like, they didn't have anything for other elite athletes in swimming, biking, or running.
Right.
So I tried to tell them, hey, I was a pretty good swimmer. I'm an okay runner. How can I prove myself to you? And I remember Libby saying, hey, go run a 10K. This woman, Libby Burrell, right. who was the
performance coordinator.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And she said, go run a 10K. I said, how fast do you want me to go? She's like, well, go do your best. No, how fast do you want me to go?
Yeah, you're not that type of guy who wants something nebulous. Give me a specific.
Yeah, so she goes, can you go under 35 minutes? Yes. Can you go under 30? Yes. Can you go under 33? Yes. Just tell me how fast you want me to run so I can show you that I can be a good triathlete.
Did you feel that you could run that fast?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah. I have no shortage of confidence in my abilities. So, I was like, okay, I'll go prove to you I can run 32 and change.
Yeah.
And she was like, if you run 32, you can come out to the Olympic Training Center in Colorado. So I was like, okay, fine. If you want to book my ticket now, like, terrible. No. Yeah. So,
you ran 32.
I went 32:18 in Boston in like a local 10K.
Yeah.
And I called her, like, finished across the line, had a few exhales, and called her and said, hey, Libby, I just went 32:18. Can I come out?
And so you go tell your boss that I think I'm going to be gone
out.
For a while.
Oh, yeah.
You're
yeah.
gone.
I'm gone. I actually saved up enough to buy a bike.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a middle of the road bike. And I was like, hey, I'm out.
Took the bike, went to Colorado.
Yep, absolutely.
And from that point, so you go there, and you're a triathlete for, what was your first race? Because at this point, you haven't done a triathlon yet.
No. And you're so I did one in Colorado Springs. It was a sprint.
Yeah.
I think I finished, there were like 200 entrants, and I was definitely in the top quarter.
Right.
But I spent the whole run bent over. I didn't know what I was doing. I ran through transition T1 with my bike shoes on.
That's good.
Yeah, I didn't want to.
Sure.
Yeah, I didn't know what I was doing. And I did two triathlons as an amateur. And I did Lifetime Fitness when it was a little bit shorter of a distance.
Right.
And I got third there as an age grouper. So I trained for a month, and then I got third. And I was like, okay, I'm good. I'm ready. Let's do this. And then my first race as a professional was down in Honduras. And it was a points race, and I got third.
So you got third. So basically, you're flying to Honduras.
Yeah.
Your first race is a pro.
Yeah. I didn't know how to build a bike or break it down. Yeah.
Put it in this bag and figure it out. Yeah. That's great. So from the point you made that decision, it was like 22 months, you're on the Olympic team.
Yep.
I like when somebody just says, I'm going to go become an Olympian, and he does it. So here you are in Athens, and you're at the start of this. You're in the Olympics, which was your dream.
Oh, yeah.
Always your dream.
Oh, the hair standing up on my back of the neck right now, just talking about it.
And the cool part was, I remember you and your coach had always talked about, I want to win the gold medal in the 1500 meters at the Olympics. Yep. And you did.
Right? I did.
You were the first one out of the water in Athens in the 1500 meters.
I was. It was a big goal of my coach, Todd Kemmerling, the team I grew up on, Eastern Express. Yeah. We always talked about going to the Olympics and meddling in the 1500, winning the 1500 meters.
Yeah.
And after the race, I invited him to come. And after the race, I was like, hey, I won the 1500 meters. Too bad we had to bike and run afterwards. But my whole philosophy at that point, I didn't have a well-rounded game.
Right.
I was good enough to make the team, but I wasn't good enough to like medal at the Olympics in the sport. And but my whole goal was, I have a weapon.
Yes, you do.
And I'm going to use it. And I'm just going to throw a grenade in there and just blow up the swim and do my thing and let the chips fall where they may on the bike and the run. I end up beating some really good, great guys. And I got 22nd at the Olympics, which for me, I was over the moon about.
Absolutely.
I was pumped. And I was like, great. I did. I realized my childhood dream. Check.
And then at that point, were you thinking, okay, 2004, now I can go medal?
No, I was thinking, that was 04 in Athens.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, okay, I'm super happy with triathlon and I think I'm done.
Oh, so you're going to walk away?
Yep.
Go back into a cubicle? And
I thought maybe I'd get onto a coaching pool deck.
Okay.
In college.
Right.
Yep. I thought I was done after
Athens. And why did you stay? Oh, actually, the other thing is after Athens, you were out, I think you were on a, after the you and your wife went out on a boat, right? You're on a cruise of some sort. And then at that point, she broke it to you that she had been diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah. That was heavy.
That was really heavy. Here you are, the high point of your life, your Olympics, 22nd, and you don't know what's next as an athlete, but your life changes in a moment.
Yeah.
How did that change you and the way you live your life?
Yeah, so I was 27 years old, achieved a lifetime dream. Physically, I was super strong. I thought I was immortal. And I was on a honeymoon with my wife on a catamaran, and she told me. And it was like, we're not immortal.
Right.
We got one shot at life. That was a big blow. My wife had known for 3 or 4 or 5 months.
She didn't want to mess up your training.
Yep. She kept it to herself.
Wow.
And she was like, I know this is like, she just didn't tell me for me because she knew I'd probably just say, okay, we're done. We're just going to focus on you.
Right.
But she didn't want that. And she was like, no, we're going to live life how we want to live, no matter how, you know, how terminal this whole pursuit is. And that was super heavy, but it was very clear at the same time. It made my decisions really easy.
Yeah, because at that point it was, we better enjoy every minute. We better live life to the fullest. We better do whatever the hell we want to do. Did that change the way you looked at the sport? Did you feel that I'm going to stay in this and travel and enjoy everything?
Yep. And I was, so when I went through the Olympics, it was, the whole pursuit was very noble, and but there wasn't any money in it. And
right.
I was like, well, I think I can be really good in this sport. I need to tweak a few things. I need to grow and get better and kind of shift my weight around, not necessarily lose weight, but just put it in different spots.
Right.
And I thought I could be really good at it and actually make a living being a professional. And
which not many people were doing at that point.
No, I think my first year as a professional, I did make money. I made $67 in the black.
Good man.
Yeah, yeah. True professional making money.
That's
all expenses, though.
Now, were the parents at some point going, hey, it's great, we sent you to Michigan and spent a lot of money getting you that degree,
and now you're
running around in a freaking Speedo. What the hell?
Yeah, they had major, major doubts. My mom lamented to my dad at one point. She goes, what is he doing? He's got a college degree. He was going to teach in high school. Are you kidding me right now? And then my brother and sister weren't gainfully employed at that time either. So she was like, yeah, she's shaking her head. And I was like, don't worry. We can take it to, I'm going to take this to the end of the earth and see how good I can be at this pursuit. Cause I thought I was a good swimmer, but I think as a triathlete, I just fit better. My mentality, my physiology, maybe I just need a little bit longer of a race in swimming.
Right.
To get it out. But for me, you know, the 2, 4, 8 hour pursuits are, you know, it gets the most out of me.
Where you really have made your name, obviously, 70.3. And a 70.3 sort of came up at around that time. You win 70.3 worlds, and you've won 29 of those? 29 70.3s?
Yeah.
So we got to figure out, maybe Super Frog will find someone. Right. So what was it about that distance? Because you're basically doubling what you were doing, right? That Olympic distance. And now you're going twice as far and having a lot of success.
And I didn't change my training too much. It was still high-end stuff.
Yeah.
I think, bottom line, I think it's like the diesel engine in me. I just need to get hot. I need to get warm and moving and get some miles behind me before I can tap into. I just don't think I let go of the throttle. I think I'm able to hold the limit for an extended period of time. But it took a 4 hour challenge to really find that out about myself.
When you did your first one of those, did you realize right then, this is it? This is something.
It was
really
Oceanside.
Good.
Back when it was Ralph's.
Yes.
And I did well. My first half, I got second to Luke Bell.
Yes.
And I was like, I think I can be pretty good at this. And then I came back the next year and won Oceanside. So that was a total thrill.
Well, and if you look at the variety of races that you've won, I think you've won Alcatraz 6 times. Is that right?
Yeah.
I think 6 times. Yeah. 6 times Alcatraz. And then obviously you've got 9 Ironman wins. What do you got?
Full. So officially in the official record book is 7. In my head, it's 9.
Because there's a couple of non-Ironman races?
No, because I've been beaten by known
drug cheats. Okay, there you go.
They've beaten me at, you know, in the official record books. They're ahead of me.
Right.
But they cheated, so I don't count that in my personal like, notebook that I sleep with.
So talking about that, I mean, it's interesting you say that because, you know, Makili Jones took a silver medal in the first ever Olympic triathlon.
Yep.
And she lost to Bridget McMahon,
yep,
who went dirty 4 years later.
Or she was dirty then, too.
Exactly. I mean, the deal is I don't think you just start that later in life. It's sort of something that you adopt early. So I always tell Makili she's a gold medalist.
Oh.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Okay. As long as you agree.
I'm okay with that.
See? Okay. You absolutely. You guys good with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody cheats. You've cheated in 2000. Somebody cheated whenever they cheated.
It's a
life, their whole career.
And it's a lifetime boost to their
system.
Absolutely.
No question about it.
And their mind.
Yes.
They know that they're able to go to that place, but they wouldn't have been able to get to that place without assistance.
So the transition, so you've transitioned from Olympic to 70.3 pretty seamlessly, doing really well. The long distance, the full, right? Especially Kona, right? And for a number of years, you'd go off the front in the swim, And then the last few years, and you've had a lot of success. You have like four or five top tens in Kona, at least four, something like that. How many?
Seven
top tens. There we go. Seven top tens in Kona. But the last few years, you've raced differently, right? You've let people go off the front of the swim. I think I even saw you doing a little backstroke during the swim. You're like, try not to fall asleep.
But
changing the whole deal. It, Andy Potts isn't the guy who's going to go off the front of the swim. You want to be there in the top five, top ten at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I would give up every first out of the water swim in every race if you could guarantee me a top finish at the end of the day, because that's the name of the game.
Right.
Get to the top at the end on the finishing tape.
Was it hard to put the ego away on that and not be the first guy out of the water was sort of your identity?
Yeah, and that's how I associated myself with. Right. For years and years as a triathlete, I was like, no, I'm a swimmer who does triathlon. And then maybe as soon as half Ironmans came around, it was like, no, I'm a triathlete. Yeah, I'm a pretty good swimmer, but I'm definitely a triathlete. So I think it was a mindset.
How tough was the transition from that 70.3 to the full?
Yeah, it's more than double. It's math says it's double the distance.
No, way more.
Physiologically, it's more than double. It's almost triple.
How did you adapt to that?
Yeah, so like the way I approach it is there are hurdles in front of you when it comes to Ironman or any obstacle, right? And you have to figure out what the highest hurdles are for you and try to lower them, and what the low hurdles are for you, so you can clear them easier.
Right.
So for me, the physical demand of the day in the swim was a really low hurdle. So I stopped focusing on it because I knew I could clear it. But the overall focus aspect, like how can I focus for a full Ironman race, that was a big challenge for me. And I need to look at nutrition. I need to look at, am I wasting energy along the day? There were a lot of things that out there that, and I didn't know that there were high hurdles for me, whether it was nutrition or more volume on the bike. Mm-hmm. I didn't know it. It was kind of like I didn't know it until I tried it.
What's fascinating is Lionel Sanders now does so much training indoors. Mm-hmm. For a number of years, people would say, Andy Potts has got to be training more outdoors. He's doing all this indoor training. Now it's like everybody's doing it. But when you were doing a lot of indoor training, mm-hmm. people were feeling that Andy, if he really wants to be successful at the long distance, he's got to be outdoors.
Yeah, I never really listened to that.
I know you didn't, but it was pretty interesting conversation. It was always fun, though.
Yeah.
People on slow twitch would be like, he's not going to win anything until he gets outdoors.
I've definitely had my critics and naysayers, but there's so much quality to the indoor ride. Totally. I have accepted outdoor riding as a big part of my program as well, but it's a lot of it is just because I couldn't handle 7 hours on the trainer.
Yeah.
But I can handle it outside. I can tolerate it a lot easier. So, as my ability to handle work has grown through the years, I'm able to build on it, just like you would in any kind of program, whether it's swimming or triathlon. You use it as your foundation and as building blocks, where you have small successes along the way. You can really build on it and make a pyramid and attack the peak goals, which for me has always been try to make triathlon exciting.
Yes.
A lot like Prefontaine. Prefontaine.
It's entertainment.
Yeah.
It is entertainment, and you've always been one of those guys who understood that. Every time you came across a line winning a race, it was like this was the first time you have ever won a race.
Sure.
And that's important.
Celebrate.
Absolutely.
It's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
Yeah. I wanted to grow the excitement level. I also wanted to challenge myself and not give away my gifts right. that I've been given and worked towards. And I wanted to show it, right? So, yeah, too often I see some of the mentality is like, oh, don't you want to hide your cards? No, like celebrate the sport, show it out there, and be proud.
What do you look at as your best race ever?
Oh, I've had a few good ones. A couple of them are out there that I didn't win.
Right.
I've had some great races where I just fell a little short at the end. I raced a lifetime race where I got pipped at the line by Matt Reed.
Ooh.
But it was a barn
great
burner.
Race.
Yeah, it was me, Matt, and Greg Bennett.
Yes.
We took it all into the chute.
Was that in Minnesota?
It was. And we all broke the course record. that was epic race. It's hard for me to discount Clearwater.
Yes. Well, 70.3 Worlds.
Yeah,
that was really epic.
It was. And that was a sprint finish.
Was it really?
It was a sprint finish against Oscar Galindez. I took him into the chute, and I was a young whippersnapper back then. I had a good kick. I knew I had him.
And that gave you a spot in Kona.
Yeah.
That gave you a spot back absolutely. Then, 70.3 yep. Worlds. If you won 70.3 Worlds, you got a spot in Kona.
Yep.
Without having to go do a full.
Yep.
Which was, so did you do a full before going?
Nope.
See, that was a smart move.
Yeah, so my first race in Hawaii was 08, and I'd never ridden more than 70 miles.
That's good.
Yep, not so good. never run further than a half.
Yeah.
Things got interesting. I remember passing Norman Stadler at mile 20.
Yeah.
And we were both basically grabbing our hamstrings, cramping up. But I was cramping slower than he was cramping.
Right.
Yeah. So it was definitely interesting. I had a smile from ear to ear that day just because it was new. It was brand new, and I was very green, but super excited, and those are good memories.
What do you look at as your best race in Kona?
The couple of years I got fourth were really exciting. I'd say maybe 15. I end up battling Jan all day. I beat him out of the water by a second. He beat me off the bike by 2 seconds. We were flip-flopping on the run the entire race. I knew it was for the podium, and he ended up beating me by like 50 seconds, but it was a great day. I had a great race. Sometimes your fastest races aren't your best races.
Yeah.
That was a real great battle. I was in contention for second for the longest time, and that was when Andy passed me, maybe at mile 20.
Oh, Raylert.
Raylert.
Yes.
Yeah. And he ran in to third. He ran into second.
Yes, he did.
And Jan got third and I got fourth.
So
it was like bang, bang, bang.
I think I saw on your schedule that you're doing Challenge Roth this year.
I am. Yeah.
Have you done it before?
Never.
Has anybody done Challenge Roth?
Yeah. I've heard that the finish line.
Greatest thing ever.
Might be the best finish line in our sport.
Ever. So we did our film, We Are Triathletes. I'll send you our film
okay.
we did on the 2014 Challenge Roth. But what's the coolest thing about it, there's 28,000 people who live in the town of Roth in Bavaria. And there's 250,000 people on the race course on race day.
Oh, wow.
It's Woodstock. And there's this thing called Solar Hill that you go up twice. There's 50,000 people.
I've seen the pictures.
And then there's a thing called the Beer Mile, which is really underestimated. There's a mile of drunk Germans who are sitting on the side in this tables drinking beer and cheering you as you go by.
And you run past tables as they're...
And you run in between the tables. You run there.
Nice.
And when you come in, we came there and we're like, so where do we keep hearing about this famous finish? And they pointed at this empty lot, this grass area. I'm like, what's that? They go, well, we build a 10,000 person stadium starting tomorrow. Right? I'm like, what? They built a 10,000 person stadium that you finish in.
Do they have a name for it?
It's just the finish line. But okay. They do fireworks at the finish, and they have the balloon kids
yes.
run in with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And Felix, whose dad started the event, started as a balloon boy.
Oh, really?
He was a balloon boy. And it's real. And last year, right, not last year, when we did an event in 2014, when we filmed it, Felix was racing. And Norman Stadler and Ferris Al-Sultan and Lothar Leader, they came in as balloon boys for Felix.
Oh, wow. That's special. That's very cool.
Very, very cool.
That's very cool.
So you've done over 200 races now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You still love it.
I do. I love it more now than I ever have in the past. And it's because I've really embraced my opportunity to share.
Yes.
Share the sport, share my knowledge, and try. It's not necessarily giving back. It's more about sharing.
Right.
And like I want to grow the camaraderie in our sport. Teach any lesson that I've learned the hard way, so people don't have to necessarily, you know, reinvent the wheel with that. And yeah, I think that's a big reason why with Daniel Brienz I started Andy Potts Racing, and we're actually here in Chula Vista at a camp.
A great camp with a full crowd here.
Full
I love
crowd.
That.
We've
I
got
love that.
We got 35 people at camp.
That's awesome.
Big source of pride for me to share what we have going on, and we do new experience. Like every camp's different. I think it's underrated how we get people to come back to camp.
That's
it's not just one hit wonder. Mm-hmm. We've got some people at their fourth camp, some thirds.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, really powerful stuff.
The one thing I've seen is a big change in the sport over the last number of years. It used to be if you rode a 212 for 56 miles, mm-hmm. you ran 210 to 215, you're in the hunt. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're not going 205, 203, sometimes 2 hours, what the hell? I mean, it's changed. Is it just the equipment? Is it just everybody focused on power meters? Why, do you think?
Yeah, so it used to be you'd swim. You'd have, like, in ITU was a wet run.
Yes.
Right? We'd get wet, we'd hold hands on the bicycle, and then we'd run. like you get off the bike and you just drill it.
Right.
Like, we were running sub 30 before Alistair made it, like, popular. But we weren't riding that hard. And now, with halves, I used to count on, you know, being fresh and being able to run a 111, 112, no big deal. But now we're riding so hard. If you can't ride your bike, you're not going to be competitive.
Exactly.
And I think it has to do, like, we're learning more about our bodies, what we're capable of holding, mm-hmm. and we get right to the line and we hold it. The half Ironman's become a little bit tactical. Ironman's becoming more tactical, especially in Kona.
Yep.
So you have to, like, pick your spots. But if you can't ride and then put together a run, like have your run still show up, you're not going to be on a podium of any race.
The thing about Kona is people talk about the heat and wind, but it really is the depth of the field, because you never see a field like that throughout the year except in Kona.
Yeah, yeah. 50 dudes who can all get it done.
Yeah. Yep. And 50 dudes who all think they can finish top 10.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you were to really get a poll, I bet you – like, of the people that think that they can get top three, realistically, it's, you know, it's maybe 10.
Right.
But all of them think they can get top 10.
The funny part is, whenever you interview a European, they're so honest. It's like, oh, if I finish top 10, I'll be really happy.
Yeah.
Any American you interview, you know, Andrew Starkowitz is like, hey, listen, I'm here to win. I'm a winning machine. Like, it's like, dude... Yeah, but that's what the Americans are more. I'm here to win the race, and I think sometimes Europeans can be a little more truthful in terms of what they reality,
like in terms of what they're capable of doing. Right. And it's not only that everybody shows up, they're good. Like they're on too.
Nobody's racing through Kona. They're not saying, I'm getting ready for Arizona and Florida. Right. No. I'm just training here. Yep. No.
Yep. That's I need not a volume it. Day. Exactly. None of that.
How about a round of applause for Mr. Andy Potts? And we'll open it up to some questions from you guys, if you got anything.
So for those of you at home and can't see it, we've got a room full of 35 people. And this is, we're in Chula Vista, having our AP racing camp, and hopefully some of my athletes can ask some really interesting questions.
Brum. That's okay. We don't usually don't film that anyways. Thank you guys for taking time out of your day to let me come on and chat.
Yeah, yeah.
Andy's always one of my favorite people to interview. Usually in Kona, he ducks me. Right? He ducks me. I try to find him all. Breakfast. Tell him he should be on our Breakfast with Bob show. He won't, because he comes in like Wednesday and hides under a rock for a few days and then shows up and goes top five, top ten in Kona. He's got a philosophy, and I don't question it.
But yeah, and there are other people tugging at my time. And
I know. You've got other stuff.
Yeah.
But sorry, what he will come to,
I'm sorry.
What he will come to is when he was first American a couple years ago, and I do the championship edition at Four Seasons, and we send a limo to pick them up, and he's like, I'll come to that. He's like, you know what? I think I can squeeze that in. Like, I think that works.
He's not lying.
See, I love it. So hopefully we just firmed up Four Seasons again for this year.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So.
All right, hopefully I can earn it.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, guys.